Accession number 31408.
John Shoebridge, Reel 7.
Right. Now, what do we want to know about the Firebrand now?
Well, I mean, just where were you? Where was the squadron? And
right. Well, I think it might almost as well if you ask me some questions.
Okay,
please,
so what, you're now with the frontline squadron. Where is it?
When I left Anthorn, I did a fortnight's safety equipment course, which concerned parachutes and May West and things like that. And then I was drafted on to 813 Squadron at Naval Air Station Leon Solent, which was the headquarters of Naval Aviation. The 813 was a member of number 1 Carrier Air Group, which comprised 801, the Sea Hornet Fighter Squadron, and 813, the Firebrand Torpedo Bomber Squadron. We're based at Leon Solent. And the first 3 months I was there, we spent doing torpedo bombing practice, rocket firing practice, general navigation duties in the squadron, and of course, in my case, getting used to working with a frontline squadron, which really I'd never been before, because with the wartime experience, we were really on our own in a baby little 3-aircraft setup, and this was a 12-plane squadron in formation flying and all that sort of thing, which I did quite happily. And we spent some nice time at Leon Solent. The other half, 801 squadron, went on board the big aircraft carrier Implacable, flagship of the Home Fleet, for their summer cruises. And we remained at Leon Solent and did more working up, and we joined Implacable in the Moray Firth. Early July of that year.
Which is 51.
1951, was it? Yeah, was it? Have a quick look.
Okay,
we all flew up to the Moray Firth, the whole 12 firebrands, led by our CO, Lieutenant Commander Henry, and all landed on this big aircraft carrier. First time in my life I'd ever landed on a huge fleet carrier, modern fleet carrier, really. She was flagship of the Home Fleet, Admiral Sir Philip Vian, of the Cossack fame. He was the one who rescued the crew of the Altmark in 1940. She'd come home from the Graf Spee, that ship, with English prisoners on board. She was a German ship in the Norwegian fjord, almost home. Captain Vine, as he was in those days, sailed the Cossack right up the fjord, and they boarded the ship, and with the cries of the navies here, opened the hold to the cheers of all the British sailors. That is, in case you don't know, it was a very famous episode in the last war. Anyway, Admiral Sir Philip Vine, Rear Admiral Sir Philip Vine, was in charge. And we were lucky in the Firebrands, because 801 had had a fairly brisk stint of operational work, whereas we just got on for the summer cruise, which consisted of Trondheim and Copenhagen, which was all rather nice, of course. And all the flying we had to do, other than a couple of practice deck landings and a little bit of formation flying, perhaps, while we were there, was fly past over Trondheim, and then another fly past as we came in near Copenhagen. And apart from that, really, it was a rather happy days, a week in Trondheim. The sun setting at 11:45 over the nightclubs, and rising at 12:45 when we had a look out of the nightclub window again. down to Copenhagen, where we had a fabulous week in Copenhagen, and then back home again, to Leon Solent.
You said earlier that the plane had a reputation for being dangerous and a devil to fly. Why was that?
Firebrand was a very difficult aeroplane, actually. It had a bad reputation. It'd been developed for about 6 years, and it had taken about 7 years, 8 years almost, before it got into frontline service, with one fault after another, made by Blackburns, who, in all fairness, didn't have a very good name for making good aircraft. They really didn't. But it had a 16-foot nose, which made a huge area in front of you, and you had to come in on almost a complete turn. The aircraft was sluggish at the best of times, and at slow speeds it became quite heavy to manoeuvre. And it was a difficult aircraft to deck land. It really was a very difficult aircraft to fly. It wasn't very good at its job. Quite out of date. In passing, I might mention out of date, whereas the Swordfish in the war, as we know it to Radu, did a great job, but it was hopelessly out of date. But for anti-submarine work, it was the ideal aircraft because it was so slow and it had good visibility, and that's just what you wanted, like a latter-day helicopter, really. And you could see the submarines, whereas the faster airplanes and that, you couldn't see them. But anyway, the Firebrand, it was completely out of date, and it was a difficult aircraft. It was said, actually, the only experienced pilots were ever posted to Fireman squadrons, and from my experience, that was true.
And did you have any losses or casualties when you were...
We had no fatalities, no. In the whole time I was flying, it had a very reliable engine. The only time I was with it, we had two engine failures, one in Weymouth Bay and one up in the Moray Firth, and both times the aircraft ditched quite nicely, and the pilot was on the wing before it had sunk and was picked up. So from that angle, it was fine. We had probably above average deck landing accidents because it was such a difficult aircraft to deck land. You may say the slightest error, whereas in many aircraft you get away with it, you wouldn't in this one.
And did it happen to you? Did you?
I had two quite big crashes on the flight deck, yeah. Both ending up in the safety barriers. No damage to me, but one aircraft actually, when I say no, there was one minor accident, really one. But the other one, the aircraft was right off.
What happened in one of them?
The one that was not my fault was when it turned out the arrestor gear was faulty and the hook bounced over all the wires and we landed up in the barrier. Luckily not going too fast at that stage. The other one was my fault under not terribly wonderful conditions, but I landed too far on one side, missed all the wires, too fast probably, ran into the barrier stanchion, which tore the whole port wing off, and undercarriage disappeared. And it was a rare old mess.
You were lucky not to go over the side, if you would.
Well, I was stopped by the barrier, actually. I was entangled, hopelessly entangled in the barrier. And
being on a large aircraft carrier, complete contrast to the Matchships, how was that?
Well, an aircraft carrier is an aircraft carrier, really. They were probably much the same. I mean, the Swordfish landed on the Maxims at 58 knots was our approach speed. This one was 90 knots. So although it was a much bigger deck and a wider deck, this was a very much bigger airplane. And there wasn't all that difference, you know. Not really. Not in the skill required. I wouldn't have thought so anyway. I will just read out a short bit I wrote about it. The Firebrand was a very poor deck landing aircraft for two reasons. Normally heavy on the controls, it became somewhat sluggish at slow speeds. But the principal difficulty was lack of vision. There was 16 feet of nose between the cockpit and the propeller, which restricted vision enormously, and meant the approach had to remain on a continual curve, almost until crossing the round down. We used to joke, 16 feet between us and the crash.
So you'd come in on a turn and almost, looking out and straighten up at the last minute.
Almost the whole way and straighten out. And all this went when you were trying to keep the speed right and get the thing right and all that sort of thing. It was difficult. It was a difficult airplane. But having said all that, the engine was the most reliable. They really were. And it was a good disher, which meant if you were flying as we were over the sea for long periods, you at least thought, well, you're not going straight to the bottom, as you would in the sea fires, and the Hawker Hurricanes and Spitfires, they were notorious for going on and hitting the water and then going straight down to the bottom. Whereas this one wouldn't. I think I would say that the Blackburn Firebrand did not really deserve its bad reputation, but could be likened not to a pedigree racehorse, but rather to a shire horse, heavy, steady and reliable. But not really a very good torpedo bomber, really.
And did you, obviously, practice and
trained? Oh, we practiced with torpedoes, yes, we did indeed, we did.
And what was the process? Again, the same?
Very similar to the swordfish, except you added, you dived down from a slightly higher height and you dropped at a faster speed. But other than that, it was very much the same. Routine was much the same, yeah.
And had any of the technology changed? Did you have radar on board now? Did you have...
No, it's a single-seater, so we had no radar, no. No, they were single-seaters, the firebrands.
Okay. You're on this particular squadron, I've forgotten the name.
813.
813. For how long?
2 years.
And you were on the carrier for part of the time? Or?
Well, we were attached to the carrier all the time. But we were based at Leon Solent for probably half the time. And the carrier would be alongside the South Railway jetty in Portsmouth. Which was nice for us, because we could go on board the ship and have drinks on board and ship's cocktail party we'd always asked to and things like that.
Being attached to, a prestige ship, again...
Oh, we were a flagship of the home fleet, yeah, we were indeed, we were.
In terms of discipline and the whole protocol side of it, how did your life change? Because were you off your short service commission by now?
I should have mentioned, yes, in 1949... limited numbers were offered to apply for permanent commissions, which I did, and I was accepted. So that time onwards, I was a permanent officer in the Royal Navy.
And how was that? What was the procedure of that? How were you invited, and how were you?
All of us who were in the Navy were invited. If we weren't permanent already, were invited to apply.
So you weren't singled out. You weren't cherry picked.
We weren't cherry picked. No, but I believe. The cherry-picked ones were ones who weren't selected, and they all had to leave after their 4 years.
I see. And then you went to, and was there a board? Were you an interview again? Or?
Oh, no.
This was just
on your captain's, and your own record, and your captain's recommendation, of course, yeah.
I see. So you're now part of the regular Navy, on the flagship of the home fleet.
That's right, yeah.
What, in terms of, the whole business of discipline, protocol, uniform, how did that change, or did it not change for
not to that extent, because, a service is a service. We'd had 2 years with the Merchant Navy, bearing in mind, of course, we were at the Naval Station Maidan, although that was a bit casual, really, but Naval Station, that we were part of the Royal Navy, and... It didn't change to that extent, no. Admiral Vine was an incredible chap, actually. He was a great man, really. Well, you may well have heard of him, but I remember a couple of incidents were rather amusing with him. I was off to the watch one afternoon, which meant standing on the gangway and saluting officers as they came on, and in Gibraltar this was. Rather fun, and the main job, most important job it was too, any foreign warships came in. You had to rapidly decide as officer of the watch. You had the Marine Band there as well, and a bugler, you see. Now, whether they were important enough for their national anthem to be played or not, or whether it was just bugler, or whether it was just me saluting, you see. And this may... My interviewer is laughing heartily at the moment, but this was a most important job. Missing this was almost worse than crashing on the flight deck. It really was.
Or playing the wrong anthem,
yeah. However, on this occasion... An Italian cruiser came in. Well, this was very obviously the Italian national anthem, so I duly briefed the major on charge of the sergeant major, I should say, on in charge of the Marine Band, and order would be played from me. So in she came past, and there I was on the gangway already, you see, and all the lower deck were all lined up, ready to go, and the Italian ship the same. It's all very important, this protocol. It probably was, really, but... So I play, so off we go. Italian national anthem. Then in my great big prod in my back. Well, I don't move. The other chap was standing on his ship like this. I'm not... No. Then a great big voice, get out of the bloody way. Look back, Admiral Sir Philip Vine. I'm taking the salute. Well, why the hell did the bloody idiot say so in the first place?
You were elbowed aside.
Oh, elbow, or it's thrown to the ground almost. That was one with him. I bet he had a good chuckle about that later on, if I know him. And another time was most amusing. He was very gruff, but I think he'd have probably half killed himself to save anybody, he used to invite members of the air group to dinner. Maybe one lot would come every cruise, or maybe two lots, eight at a time. And well, I went. And Bill Sabey, he died about 2 years ago. He's in the Telegraph, but he was the ship's Barracuda pilot, safety pilot. Used to get the mail and things. Not one of the frontline squadrons, but he had been a frontline squadron boy. And we were all chatting away. He's in. Vine had really great long ears, and Bill Sabey was at the bottom of the table announcing in a very loud voice to his pal how the Admiralty should run the fleet out, obviously. So all of a sudden, bang, 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 with the gavel there, Vine, Lieutenant Sabey, I believe you have some most interesting observations as how we should run the Royal Navy, particularly admirals and people like me, so perhaps you'd like to stand on your own feet and give us the benefit of your great experiences. So, poor Bill had to stand up. I bet Vian probably had roared with laughter when he got back to we'd all gone about this episode. And I had another funny experience. This is going some years back when I was in at Anthorn with. I'd trained a flight to Yeovilton, and I was going down to Yeovilton to pick up an aeroplane from Roeburgh, the Plymouth Airfield, to take back to Anthorn. It had been part of Plymouth Air Day. And we got in with our, in May Wests and battle dress, I think, or, you know, May Wests and parachutes and things, and sitting opposite us, first-class carriage again, two chaps who looked like in civvies but looked like naval officers, looked a bit senior. We were two youngish lieutenants. They got chatting to us anyway, and we were encouraged to give them the benefit of our naval experiences and how the Admiralty should be run and how aircraft carriers should be run in general, which we duly did. And I was CEO of the flight of the squadron at the time. When they got out, we began to wonder who the hell this lot were. So as they left, they said, oh, by the way, they said, you must come on board and why don't you stay the night with us tonight? HMS Illustrious, said they. Well, this is the big carrier was in at the time. Well, we said, we can't do that because we are booked into Royal Naval Barracks and we can't really just cancel that at the last minute. But naturally, we got, oh, they said, look, you must come along at 9 o'clock tonight and the... And I'll brief the officer of the watch that you're coming and we'll look after you. Well, thank you very much. So we loved it. That lot of free drink, you see, on board, duty-free. So we were saying, well, who the hell are this lot now? We reckon, wonder what if we've said too much now, we reckon. Probably the captain, we thought the captain maybe, and the commander of the ship, something like that. Maybe the commander of commander air or something.
Hang on a second. Something's gone.
Oh.
No. Sorry, just say again, John.
Okay, are we still going or not?
No, we've not. We've stopped.
Oh.
Why is that? Can you speak?
Speak, right, yes. Are we going now or not?
No, we're not. No,
oh. Well, am I all right here or not?
I don't think you've just... Oh, I can hear that. Yeah, okay. That's strange. Just come back again. Okay, can you speak?
Are we okay now?
Say again, sorry.
Are we all right now?
Yes, we're good. Okay. Right. We're okay.
Anyway, we got to the station. We thought these must be senior officers of the ship, but not too senior, we thought. So... Anyway, a big staff car came for them, so we didn't know. Anyway, we had our dinner in the barracks and waiting board, and there, when we got to the quarter deck, there was Lieutenant Chambers, I remember his name, was a pal of mine. Said, who were that? Oh, he said, don't you know who they were? I said, no. He said, well, that's the Vice Admiral Third Aircraft Carrier Squadron and the captain of the ship. I bet they laughed about afterwards.
You didn't go for your drinks then, or?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, we were down to the wardroom. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And they came?
Oh, no, they wouldn't be there. Oh, no. No, but we had, from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, we had a good old booze up there.
Well, they obviously didn't hold too many grudges.
They didn't. No. They'd be the same when they were young people, yeah. That was part of the beauty of the services, you know. Some things like that happened. I mean, obviously, if you said something ridiculous like... you know, you want to sabotage it or do something stupid, yeah, but...
Sure. The actual carrier itself, the Illustrious, the one that your squadron was attached to...
That was Implacable.
Implacable.
Well, and later Indomitable.
And was that a modern...
These were both... Well, the wartime built ones, yeah. But they were modern. They were the latest ones we got, yeah.
And in terms of, you know, the living on them, you know, the vast numbers of men, this whole apparatus of this huge ship, how did you fit into that? Or from a Mack ship, again, I'm just trying to think of this contrast.
Well, very comfortable. I mean, indeed they were. I was in a very nice cabin of two. The showers and that were actually on... We had our own wash basin in the cabin, but the showers were down a deck below, actually. But a big wardroom with a big bar, big modern bar and a big dining room. And, oh, yes, they were very comfortable ships, they were indeed. In Packet, well, probably a little more so than in Dom, although they were both of the same, exactly the same class, but one was built by Swan Hunter in Plaquemine, Newcastle, and Indomitable, I believe, was built on the Mersey. And she wasn't quite as comfortable, but they were very good ships, both of them. They really were, oh yes.
The angled flight deck and mirrors...
That was after my time.
That was still after your time, sorry, yeah, okay, yeah. I didn't know enough about that. Okay, this period then, in this frontline squadron, how any other incidents that really stick, or...?
Well, fast flying goes...
I mean, say technological advances, things with jets beginning to come in...
Jets weren't in... As far as the Air Branch jets weren't in, no, at all. The Sea Hornet, which was the other half of Air Branch, they were the fastest piston-engine aircraft in the world. And the RAF had got their Meteors. I think we were developing Sea Vampire squadrons at that time, and maybe the Sea Venom was coming in, but they were only just coming in, really. So this was the... we were the premier air group, really. Whether we were in practice or not, I don't know, but in theory we were. And it was a great life, it really was. We did summer cruises, you see. We did a summer cruise, autumn cruise, spring cruise. First year we were in the Copenhagen area, then we went to south of France for the winter, the autumn and winter cruises. And then the next year we were in Stockholm for the summer cruise, which again was great. And we had a lot of time in Gibraltar and Malta, Villefranche and Nice and Monte Carlo and places.
And in terms of the flying, again, you were doing...
We were doing exercises, mostly. I tell you what we did do while we were there. Basically, you may remember the submarine Frey. She went down in 1951 in the Channel with loss of a whole lot lost, HMS Frey. Well, that happened we were at lunch at Leon Solent, we were ashore then, and there was an announcement of all firebrand crews or pilots to report to the control tower, which we did, and we were told that this submarine was missing. And we spent the whole afternoon flying up and down areas of the channel looking for signs, which we didn't, of course, find. Although it later turned out she had gone down quite close to where we were searching, but, of course, there was no hope of finding her at all.
The submarine was found relatively recently? Am I getting that confused?
1951, this happened.
And when was the submarine raised?
Oh, no, that wasn't that one. Was that the Affray? There was some talk of the Affray. There was one off the Mersey that went down in 1939.
No, this is another one.
This probably is the Affray, then. It probably is. There was some talk of it. I don't know that it had been actually raised. Some talk they may be trying to raise it.
I think they'd located it anyway.
They located it, yeah, they located it, all right. They think it hit a merchant ship, or a merchant ship hit it, when it was underwater. But I remember that with the firebrands, though we spent a long time going up and down one afternoon.
Okay. And you're in the squadron for two years again?
2 years, yeah.
And then? So now we're up to 19...
Well, then I went to do my seamanship training.
Why was that? Why would you take a very highly trained pilot from a frontline squadron?
Well, the theory was, you see, that the Navy... everybody really ought to be a naval officer, as against flying. And quite a lot of us were given 12 months to be training in a small ship to be able to take charge of a small ship. And one or two who stayed in later on did actually become command of a small ship, but they were mostly ex-Dartmouth boys who'd been through Dartmouth and then gone on to fly afterwards. And it was a good thing, really, to get the whole thing together as against a split Air Force and Navy running, trying to make one service together. And I thoroughly enjoyed my 12 months in a destroyer. I really did.
Can you very briefly talk well, this would be now 51?
51, this was,
51.
Yeah.
And were you given any choice? Did you have to do this?
Oh, you got no choice. Oh, no, well, I mean, you know... I don't think at that stage you did get any choice, no.
So your next tour of duty, you were going to forget about flying, you were going to be...
Oh, yes. Oh, you couldn't have said no. You couldn't have, no. You did what you're told, and that was it.
So you were on a... Where was the destroyer, and what was it?
She was based in Chatham, and she was actually C&C the Nore, which what it was worth. There were two of us, and I can't remember the other one's name, but... had a commander and eight other officers, including me. I took the place of a fully trained ex-seaman, actually. Although, obviously, it was about 5 months before it was announced I could be given my watchkeeping certificate. But I took to it very happily, and we went to Londonderry quite a bit. We went into Liverpool to do a bit in there, and saw Carousel, the big musical in Liverpool, and Liverpool Press Club, I remember, was great fun. We met the King of Norway when he came over for King George VI's funeral. Met him in the North Sea and escorted him in on a Norwegian destroyer, he was. What else did we do? We went to Hamburg. It was a big exercise. Then we went to Cuxhaven and into Hamburg. We took a train, two of us, to Hamburg one early evening, came back the next morning. Hamburg was quite an eye-opener in those days.
It must have been. It was still pretty flattened, wasn't it?
Well, the Reaper Brown, which was the...
Which has never changed.
That hadn't changed at all, actually. No.
I've been there, actually.
Oh, you are? Well, I don't think we got out of the Reaper Brown. We didn't get there till about 7 at night, and we started coming home at about 1 in the morning, so...
it was pretty heavily bombed, wasn't it, in the war? It must have been pretty flattened.
Oh, it was, indeed, yeah. And
in terms of your training as a
seaman,
I mean, what did you find easy, difficult? What areas?
I found the taking sights, you know, star sights, not easy at all. Other than navigation is navigation, really. Whether be it on a ship or be it in an aeroplane, really and truly. So that was relatively simple navigation. I mean. Running fixes, maybe. A running fix is a little different to what you do in an aeroplane. But again, that if you did navigation, you knew that that was easy enough. And, I mean, you've been in the Navy long enough to know that if you turned the port wheel, the wheel to the right-hand side, it would go to starboard, and the other way it would go to port, and so on. So, and if you pull the throttles back on the thing there, well, the engine loop would slow down, I mean. And... it wasn't too difficult to pick up. I was made forecastle officer, which my predecessor had done, which I didn't, you know, dropping the anchors and that, which I didn't know very much about. But, I mean, you've got a good petty officer, and as long as you knew the right time to say drop or whatever you said, then all was well, you see.
And in terms of actually handling men, I mean, this must have been something you've not done before.
Well, you'd always got... your maintenance crew, of course, you used to be in control of them, you see. So from that point of view, and I mean, you used to be in charge of parades and things like that. So in that angle, you were quite used to it.
Okay.
And the great expression in the Navy is "carry on, chief." And you mean you hope that hell he knows what to do next.
And I mean, were you accepted? Did people sort of say?
Very much so. Yeah, very much.
The flyboy. I mean.
I know what you mean. No, very much so. A lot depended on you, and a lot depended on you. If you went in with the right attitude, you wanted to learn, and you were happy to be there, well, that was fine. You were going to be greatly welcome. But if you went as one or two did, never should have been sent there in the first place. Bolshy outlook for the word go, and of course. You fishheads don't know what the hell it's like to fly an aeroplane and all that sort of thing. I don't want to be here. Well, then, of course, you weren't going to get on. Of course, you weren't. No, I enjoyed it very much. So, and I was accepted very much, yeah. Indeed, yes.
So you do a year, and then what happens at the end of that year?
Well, I then went straight back to flying again, but...